Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this very first weekend. I hate to say it, in December. Okay, call me nuts, but I still say summer's not over till I say it's over, and, well, I'm still going to hold on to that thought because I'm in denial. What can I tell you? Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. Want to know where we're coming from? Well, that's an easy one because it's from one of my most favorite cities in the world. I actually call it America's most underrated city. We're coming to you from Chicago and from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel. Brand new hotel. Beautiful hotel right in downtown Chicago. Very, very close to the lake, as a matter of fact. And lots of stuff to talk about in this hour, as well as the rest of the show. First and foremost in the news, you'd have to be in coma not to have heard this story this week. But now we're going to try to put it in perspective. Something that I actually thought, in all due honesty, I never thought would happen. And the reason why I never thought would happen, because the chairman of the airline itself told me on more than one occasion directly to my face, number one, as a matter of pride, we have never filed for bankruptcy. We will never file for bankruptcy. And earlier this week, American Airlines, the last of the legacy carriers never to have filed for bankruptcy, did just that. And in the process, the chairman essentially lost his job. That was Gerard Arpey, the very same person who told me they would never file. Joining me now on the phone to try to help us put all this in perspective, the business reporter for the Dallas Morning News, one of our regulars on the show, Terry Maxson. In fact, Terry, you broke the story.
That's right. We found out Monday evening that they'd be filing Tuesday morning. I think Gerard Arpey's, the chairman and CEO's, his departure was probably kind of a moral stand on his part because he had said he did not believe that's how corporations could do. I'm not saying that he disagreed with the corporation's decision when it was made. He just knew that he did not want to go through that.
He didn't want that as part of his legacy.
He didn't want that part of American Airlines' legacy either. So I think that's kind of a mixed message. I think he understood it was necessary. He understood it was necessary for him not to participate in it.
It's very easy to look in hindsight and say, oh, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. At the same time, I'm one of those guys, call me a little bit naive about this, who looked at American Airlines. Remember, I'm the guy, Terry, who did that two-hour special on CNBC, at that point the largest airline in the world, American Airlines, a symbol of an airline you never thought would ever get to this precipice.
Well, I was talking to Michael Boyd yesterday, the aviation consultant.
Sure.
And he made the point very clearly that if you want to prorate how much of this to blame on fuel, how much to blame on labor, how much to blame on the economy. He said, on this case, you blame it 100% on fuel. And if you look back at what AMR paid for fuel 2 years ago, if they had the same price for jet fuel this year, they would probably have made over $1.5 billion. Instead, they're on target to lose probably about $1.2 billion this year. You know, that's like real money.
Yeah. No, that's not like real money. That is real money.
Well, when you have that, what you found Wall Street investment analysts and observers noting was that they said if things continue like they are, eventually AMR and American Airlines are going to run out of money. And so they were saying they saw a liquidity squeeze sometime in 2012, and depending on what their modeling was, you know, maybe middle of the year, maybe later in the year. The question was if you find that it's going to be inevitable to file, why not file when you got a lot of money in the bank, in American Airlines' case, more than $4 billion, rather than wait till it's all gone? Then you have to go to some big investor, some big lender, and say, give me enough money so I can keep operating through bankruptcy. You've lost control of it, and we might say a lot of times that's when you see some other company come in and buy you up cheap.
Sure. Well, you know, here's an interesting story that most people don't realize. I'm going to be working on it now for CBS News. Forget the market cap of American, which is relatively low at about $600 million. Look at the valuation of its own frequent flyer program, which is actually worth more than the airline when you take a look at it. This is something that people forget. When Delta Airlines was in bankruptcy, their largest creditor, their largest debtor-in-possession financer was American Express, because they had co-branded their frequent flyer program with the American Express card, and it was American Express's best interest to keep Delta Airlines in the air, because if Delta wasn't flying, nobody was going to carry the American Express card. American has that relationship with Citibank.
Yeah, and was it last year, year before, where I believe they did a forward sale of about $1 billion worth of Advantage miles to Citibank. So there's a lot of people who want American Airlines to succeed here. At the end of 2010, I think they listed 67 million Advantage members, frequent flyer program members. That's nearly one out of every 100 people in the world. So many of them are infrequent frequent flyers, but there's a whole bunch of people who do not want American Airlines to go away or to shrink significantly. And there, Peter, you remember back 30 years ago when Braniff went under? Actually, it was in May of 1982.
I remember it. It just quit
flying. Contrast to what we've seen when American Airlines filed for bankruptcy, or in the past decade, Delta, Northwest, United, U.S. Airways. It was tremendously disrupting for the people of the airline. Is the people who loaned it money, gave it credit, operated it, were employed there. But for the flying public, there was very little notice. If there was, because it's business as usual. Your frequent flyer miles were honored. Your tickets were honored. Your flight flew
sure. The
next day.
And that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah, the impact on consumers. On its customers, if it happens, will happen farther down the road. You know, there's some debate about how much, if any, American Airlines will shrink as a result of this. But that answer we probably won't be seeing until sometime in 2012.
Sure.
Maybe late in 2012. We don't know.
I mean, my prediction here, and of course I can be proven wrong, is that the way American Airlines is going to shrink, they're going to finally figure out a way to dump Eagle, and they're going to take a lot of their low-yield routes and reallocate aircraft. And you'll find yourself on planes that are even more full.
Yeah, I think that's the case. The previously mentioned Mike Boyd put out a report on Thursday where I think he estimates that of American Eagle, that's American Airlines' regional affiliate, of the 299 airplanes they're now flying, that maybe 100 will go away.
Wow.
So small jets that, because of high fuel prices, are no longer economical to fly.
Amazing. I mean, the bottom line is, for consumers in the short term, not a big problem. In the long term, jury is still out. Terry Maxson, the man who broke the story of the American Airlines bankruptcy, thank you for joining us. Terry Maxson from the Dallas Morning News. When we come back, more from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel in Chicago. And, of course, more on the American Airlines bankruptcy in our next hour. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Chicago right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel. Brand new hotel just opened up very recently, like within the last month here in Chicago. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time of the show, I encourage you to go to our website with the most imaginative name ever, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of aid and relief organizations doing all that essential and hard work in Japan, in Western China, in Chile, in Haiti. Let's not forget our friends in Haiti. That rebuilding effort is going to take at least another 7 years. And even in Christchurch, all of those places, victims of either earthquakes or tsunamis in the last 22 months. The cool thing about that list is there are now opportunities for you to structure your own volunteer vacation to get up close and personal. I know a lot of you have already texted $10 on your phone to people like the American Red Cross. That's great. They've generated over $50 million in donations. Continue to do that. But the thing that's going to be life-changing for you is to structure your own volunteer vacation where you get to actually go up close and personal to these locations and help them out in particular. And when you look at this list, you will see all the great things that you relate to that you can actually bring to the party. Based on what you do, whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, doesn't matter. And for those of you with kids over the age of 8, many of these programs allow you to take your kids as well. What a life-changing experience for them as well. So once again, check out our website. Now we're joined by a good friend of ours, a regular on our show. You can read him every Tuesday in the New York Times, our good pal, Joe Sharkey. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Peter.
Got a question for you. We were just talking about, you know, who checks the scales at the airport for overweight bags? The answer is nobody. And not only that, it's always the airline's word against yours. I want to see the Department of Weights and Measures stamp next to those scales at the airport. That's number one. And number two, you just had a very interesting story about people carrying on weapons now.
Well,
what is that?
Before we get to guns, let me give you the Sharkey strategy for airlines, the airline saving the planet strategy, and that is...
I can't wait.
You board everybody on the plane, you close the doors, and then you sell them a bunch of stuff, and you charge them fees, and then you kick them off without ever taking off. I mean, it could happen, well, right?
Listen, if the airline... Look, right now, the airlines make more money with ancillary fees than they actually make from operating the airline.
Yeah, they do.
So if the airlines could figure out a way not to fly you and still charge you, look how much money they'd save.
Well, sure, and they could just say that they're saving the planet, and they would get all kinds of credits. So there we have it. Guns. You want to talk about guns?
Yeah, I do. Let's talk about guns.
This goes under the subject of a growing file I have, which is entitled "Who Knew," and that is that. 4 to 5 guns a day are found by the TSA at checkpoints in passengers' carry-on luggage, and that's up from about 2 a day, according to the TSA last year. So, I mean, I was surprised to find that out. John Pistol, the TSA chief, has been talking about this. I mean, who would bring a gun to an airport checkpoint? And it turns out that most of the people who do are people, I think of them as knuckleheads, but I got a lot of response to that, who just plumb forgot that they had a gun in their bag. You know, a lot of people carry guns, but basic gun safety, as any gun advocate will tell you, says that you're supposed to always know where your gun is, and so forgetting that it's in your gym bag when you go through board an airplane is not good gun safety. But then there's a small number of other people who actually conceal their guns, artfully concealed, the TSA calls it, and that means you've deliberately tried to sneak a gun deliberately onto an airplane, risking arrest in the process by law enforcement. And who in the world are those people? And I've subsequently found out that there are there are some gun advocates who think that guns should be allowed on airplanes if they're carried by responsible gun owners. They quote the presidential candidate Ron Paul, who has said that law-abiding citizens should be able to carry guns on airplanes. So in a nutshell. Who knew?
He actually said that? Is that part of his campaign strategy?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yeah. I saw – look, you had a report about a guy in October who tried to board a plane at DFW. Listen to this. With 3 carry-on bags that conceal 2 pistols, 2 ammunition magazines, 8 knives, and a handsaw. I'm sorry. There's a problem there.
Yeah, there should be a fee for that.
No, I have the answer. Wait, you just give me the best answer. The airline should sell you guns on the plane. They sell you everything else. Right?
Well, they can sell bullets. People are already bringing the guns on. I guess they're... No, in fact, you know, actually, Peter, most of the guns that the TSA is catching in the concealed part... are loaded, and some of them even have rounds in the chamber. I mean, this is this just absolutely surprised me. I live in the old Wild West here in southern Arizona. It's not like I'm surprised by guns or anything, but I had no idea that that many people were towing them to the airport.
And let's not forget, I caught a lot of flack when I was questioning the idea that the pilots are now allowed to carry guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I really want. I want something to go off in the cockpit.
Yeah, you know? But a pilot can crash a plane, you know. The pilot's in complete control of the airplane. I'm not particularly astonished by that. As much as I am, by the fact that you know the guy sitting next to me in 36B could be packing.
Well, probably is right now. He's heard you. He's heard you.
Yeah.
Wow. So what we should do is get a couple of guys on the plane, like Plaxico Burress from the New York Giants, and a couple of guys who just normally pack. We'll get the old days of P. Diddy, and just get them all on the plane and just make it a charter flight and just see what happens.
A charter flight is perfect.
Wow. And you know what we'll do? We'll call it the Rootin' Tootin' Shootin'. No, okay, fine.
The Rootin' Tootin' Shootin' Flight. Yeah, you got it. You got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Wow. And you know what? You'd probably sell that thing out.
I'll bet you could. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, you know, it could happen.
And they'll use the pillows that they sell you as silencers.
Okay.
We've come up with something here.
All right,
I love
it. That goes in the file. It could happen.
Okay, so now let's get serious for a second.
Yeah.
With John Pistol from the TSA saying it's a problem, and they're confident, and they're actually seeing all these weapons. What are they doing? Are they confiscating the weapons?
Most times, the weapons they call law enforcement. You know, the TSA are not cops.
Right.
So when they find a gun, they call the local cops, and it's adjudicated. You know, it's processed from there. I think they told me 700 arrests so far this year on gun charges. And none of these people are terrorists, by the way. These are, you know, just your average citizen. And
now,
isn't it interesting that John Pistol at the TSA
pronounces
his last name Pistol? He told me that when he was an FBI agent, he loved answering the phone saying, FBI, Pistol.
But now let's go a little bit further out here.
Yeah.
There are certain states now where the lobbying groups have allowed people now to carry loaded weapons into airports anyway.
Right. Yeah. Into the non-secure. Well, I mean, I guess you can if you're allowed to carry a concealed weapon. You certainly nobody's going to stop you as long as you don't try to get into the secure area of
an
airport.
Right. But here's the irony of all this. You're allowed to carry your weapon into the non-secure area of the airport. The very fact that you're bringing the weapon there doesn't make me feel secure.
No. Right.
Because you got one guy denied boarding on a plane or not getting his upgrade, he's going to whip out the weapon. I mean, you know.
Could lose it, yeah. Well, you know,
most gun owners, as we know, are
responsible citizens. But I come back to this thing. All right, if you forgot your guns in your bag, you're not a responsible gun owner. And I don't care what the NRA types holler at me about that. That's a basic rule of gun safety. So,
I will tell you this. Before 9/11, the FAA would report, and that was as it came under FAA statistic keeping for some reason I don't understand. But the FAA used to report that they would find in a given year over 1,000 discarded weapons in trash cans before the magnetometers. And
really?
Why was that? When they did the actual survey, they found out it was mostly women whose boyfriends or husbands had given them guns, and they did forget they were in their bags, and they got to the security checkpoint and went, whoops, and they would just throw the guns out.
Yeah, that's correct, but you're not supposed to forget. That's a rule. I mean, that's, you know, the NRA will tell you that. You should know where your gun is. So to those people who are forgetting, don't bring it.
There's a lesson. Joe Sharkey from the New York Times saying, please don't forget you're carrying a weapon before you get to the airport. I love it. All right, Joe. Joe Sharkey from the New York Times.
Great
read him every Tuesday. And if you don't like it, well, then he's got a gun for you.
Just shoot me. All right. Bye.
Goodbye, man. And when we come back, you know, I said this at the beginning of the show. Chicago is my favorite, and I happen to think the most underrated big city in America. And joining us when we come back, the deputy mayor of Chicago, to tell us why. Not that he has any reason to tell us, because he's the deputy mayor of Chicago. He is going to tell us. And when we come back, we'll also take your calls and read a lot of your emails, because some of you out there are really, really angry. Okay, when we come back from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel here in Chicago, Peter Greenberg Worldwide with you on this weekend after the most dysfunctional family get-together in your life, otherwise known as Thanksgiving. Back with more right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Radisson Blue, the new Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Taking your calls at 888-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it on the air a little bit later in the show. We got lots of your emails to read, and some of them are doozies, so stick around for that. I said at the beginning of the show, and I'll say it again, I've been saying it for years, that Chicago is, in my book, America's most underrated big city. Most of my friends, I'm sad to say, fly over it. Or if the closest they get is O'Hare, changing planes. They don't get a chance to get in. And once they do get in, boy, then it turns them around. And everybody thinks it's always too cold. And, of course, in the interest of full disclosure, I went to school in Madison, Wisconsin. That's cold. Chicago, by comparison, is beach weather. But we'll get to that later. Joining me now, we're honored to have him with us, the Deputy Mayor of the City of Chicago, Mark Engelson.
Peter, thank you for coming to Chicago on the six-month anniversary of the Rahm Emanuel administration, on a day when we passed our budget 50-0 in the City Council. Delighted to see you here.
Wow, I bet you're a happy guy. Bottom line is, what's the one thing that people, the misperception of Chicago, what's the one thing they don't understand?
The one thing that is the best-kept secret about Chicago is that we are among the top theater communities in the world. We have more than 200 theaters here. We have world-class theater, absolutely wonderful. It's not well known. We're going to promote the heck out of it. It will be well known.
I have to tell you this. I was a correspondent for Newsweek for many, many years in Los Angeles, and there was this stereotype that they had at the editors in New York that there was no culture west of the Hudson River. And then where do you think Broadway plays got their work at? It wasn't just up at Hartford. It started here.
Absolutely, yes, and it's still going on here.
Exactly.
Day in and day out. Wonderful theater town, wonderful restaurant town, great museums, Chicago Symphony, Lyric Opera, very, very special place. Come here to go shopping. It's special.
I never shop where I live. I always shop in Chicago. I actually do. I just walk up and down Michigan Avenue and realize that my business manager is going to shoot me.
Tell all your friends. Don't let him shoot you. We need you.
And then, of course, there's the other stereotype, and you've heard this so many times before, the Windy City. It's not because – it wasn't named the Windy City because of wind.
Well, it could have been named the Windy City because of wind. When the wind whips up off the lake, it's –
it gets a little windy,
It gets a little windy.
But that's not why.
I'm here to learn from you.
Oh, really? Oh, my – I can tell you something?
Absolutely.
So you'll believe anything I tell you?
I will listen to anything you tell me, Peter.
Hey, you passed the budget. You're in a good mood.
Absolutely.
The Windy City was named for politicians.
This is true.
One of whom I'm actually talking to now.
I was hoping you didn't know that. I'm actually not a politician. I'm a businessman turned government servant. Does that make me a politician?
I'll let you off the hook.
Thank you.
When you talk about the restaurant scene, you know, if you didn't know any better, you would think the restaurant scene was no Coke, Pepsi, Cheeseborg, and you'd end up at Billy Goat's. And yet you got cutting-edge cuisine here.
World-class cuisine here, world-class wine lists here. I'm not in the business of giving out 17 plugs for our top restaurants. Alinea did get a whole bunch of stars from Michelin just the other day. True is here. We've got some of the best steakhouses in the world.
You know, the thing about True, which is amazing, if you eat there, he does so, and bring your wallet, but if you eat there, they do what they call the caviar stairs. Unbelievable. And literally, it's a dark green glass, like the old Coca-Cola glass stairs, and of like eight, nine different kinds of caviar.
Don't forget some of our Chicago historical.
Okay, stuff. You want to talk about deep dish pizza? Go ahead.
No, steak. Yeah. Okay, the Erie Cafe.
Yep.
Gene and Georgetti's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Fish. Nomi.
Yep.
Okay.
Nomi's
good. You want more?
No, yeah. Keep going. Services. I'm ready. Go ahead.
Okay. Japanese. Okay. Or if you will, Japanese, which is where we eat our Japanese food. It goes on and on and on. It's literally a wonderful place to visit. Interestingly, many of our visitors come because of our convention center, largest in North America.
In North America, right? Yeah. McCormick Place.
McCormick Place. For a very short period of time, were losing a little business to places like Orlando and Las Vegas because of some labor misunderstandings. Now,
I know all about those labor misunderstandings.
Okay, well, you and me both.
Yeah.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel solved them 2 weeks ago. $500 million in hotel refurbishments were released and are now underway. Six new shows have been announced. Many people who had taken their business elsewhere, bringing it back. We're literally delighted about this. Orlando and Las Vegas, watch out.
What happens in Las Vegas is moving to Chicago?
What happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas, the way I hear it. But the shows are coming to Chicago.
All right, when we come back, I want to talk to you about you as a local here and where you like to hang out and where you like to go that's not necessarily in the brochure, and also about some of the hotel development here, because Chicago's got some great hotels, but you're right, they needed some refurbishment.
We're broadcasting from a 334-room hotel, a great one.
And the name of that hotel is where we're coming from, the Radisson Blue Aqua, right here on LaSalle, I believe.
Near LaSalle.
Yeah.
334 of our 33,000 hotel rooms in Chicago.
Okay, we'll come back with the deputy mayor right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Radisson Blue. It's the Aqua Hotel, brand new hotel here in Chicago. And we've been talking to the Deputy Mayor, Mark Angleson. And Mark, it's interesting to me because I like Chicago as a walking city. Last night, I started over by the water tower and just went up and down Michigan Avenue, then went down underneath the old Bob Newhart building, the 430 North Michigan, which I used to have an office at for Newsweek, down around Billy Goat's, over to Shaw's, and of course had to wait for a table, but I got my seafood fix last night. My question to you is, where do you like to go that may not be in the brochure, but where you like to hang out to eat?
Gosh, it would depend on my mood.
If you're angry, I'm kidding.
So the Rosebud Steakhouse is a wonderful restaurant. Palago, a fine Italian place. There are great hotel restaurants in this town. One of them, which is in this hotel. Plenty in the Drake, which has been here since God was a boy.
Oh my God! Of course.
Very, very special places to go and eat in this town. You know, many of our visitors are not merely conventioneers, not merely tourists. They're students. In fact, there was a report issued just earlier this week about exchange students in the United States.
And that's been a big problem for the United States in terms of the brain drain, because we're still thought of as an unwelcoming country by so many people in terms of getting the right visas. It's nice to see that that's changing a little bit.
It's changing dramatically. We're up 5% in terms of our foreign students generally coming into the United States, 9% here in the great state of Illinois, 33,800 foreign students here this year, spending a net $1 billion.
Of their parents' money.
Of somebody's money. out of $21 billion spent in the entire United States. So I would say to your listeners, if they are parents, they should send their encourage their children to travel overseas. If your listeners are students themselves, they should go overseas. Everybody who doesn't have a passport should get one.
Isn't that amazing how many Americans don't have passports?
Astonishing, actually.
I mean, the number is ridiculous. It's gone up 2% in the last 2 years only because the U.S. changed the rules as to who could go to Mexico or Canada. They needed a passport suddenly. So that extra 2% that went up, it wasn't people who were really traveling there because they wanted to travel there. They were like long-distance truckers who had to like drive across the borders. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
See, I think, but here's my question for you, and you should tell the mayor, he should check into this based on his connections back in D.C. How many members of the United States House of Representatives and the Senate have passports?
The numbers are astonishingly low.
Unbelievable. I think we should all take up a collection, buy them all passports, and then get them out of town.
Yeah, and it's not just to promote tourism and travel.
Yeah.
Okay, I had the privilege, I wasn't a Fulbright scholar or anything like that. I should have worked harder. But I had the privilege of living overseas, both in Asia and in Europe as an adult. If we could get them early, send as many of ours as we can over there, get as many of theirs as we can, bring them over here, it will solve a lot of the world's problems.
Because travel and tourism, this is going to sound very Pollyanna-ish, but I think you'll agree with me, travel and tourism breaks down so many barriers. It builds so many bridges because people get a chance to see each other face-to-face.
Yes.
I know. Where'd you live in Asia?
Singapore. Traveled a lot.
Yeah, you did. You used that as the hub.
I used it as the hub. It was 1981. That would be 30 years ago.
Oh, that was Lee Kuan Yew.
It was, well, he's still here.
We know. I know. And no spitting, no chewing.
No chewing.
That's right. And if you put any graffiti on the wall, you get caned.
Do they still do that?
Well, go ahead and try it sometime. They just opened up a huge hotel there with gambling. That never would have happened when you were there.
It would not have happened when I was there. We'd like it actually to happen here in Chicago.
And what are the prospects of that?
Hope is not a strategy. I'm hopeful that it'll happen next year.
Great. Will you bet me on it? Oh, that would be gambling. I can't do that.
I think we can gamble. I think we just can't have a casino.
Ah, okay. But the bottom line is, I totally agree with you about get out of town just to be able to appreciate what you have and also to basically exchange. It's really about an exchange, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Wow. Well, listen, for those people who think Chicago just has two seasons, winter and construction, I'm here to tell you that they don't. I wish the Cubs would actually get to the World Series. I'm very angry about that.
How do you feel about the Bulls-Knicks games that we're not going to be able to see this year?
I know. Well, you know what? The Knicks, well, I don't care about the Knicks. Honestly, they haven't had a team in a while.
You're in the right city for that.
I know. However, I went to school in Madison, Wisconsin, and you know what? They could be going to the Big Ten Championship. It could actually be today. I'll let you know.
Go Wisconsin.
That was the best answer you had all day. Deputy Mayor Mark Engelson, thank you for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
All right, when we come back, more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Back with more right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Brand new hotel. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill because we'll be reading your emails in the next hour. Just email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Now, as a matter of introduction to my next guest, I should tell you that when I first came to Chicago, I was limited to deep dish pizza, bratwursts, if I could find them, and guessing the age of the mystery hot dog in the rotisserie at the airport. I mean, it wasn't really known. And meat and potatoes, right? Well, my next guest has gone a little bit beyond that. In fact, way beyond that in terms of cutting-edge food and a true gastronomic experience. It's Danny Grant, who is an amazing chef, not only the fact that we're talking Michelin, Danny Grant, but also what's really changed in the entire food scene here in Chicago, right, Danny?
Yeah, that's right. I think we've been evolving over the past 10 years, for sure.
Now, there's Rhea.
Yep.
And then the Elysian Hotel just got all these accolades, you know, Condé Nast Traveler, I mean, over-the-top kind of stuff.
It's been a pretty exciting past year and a half.
What are you doing differently? I mean, other than basically, you know, embracing the farm-to-table idea and working with a lot of local purveyors, what else?
Well, I think we're really running the restaurants and the hotel like a true restaurant. I think many times in a hotel, it can be lost in the running it like a hotel.
Give me an example.
Room service can be treated like room service, a standard Caesar salad or a wrap or something like that. We really want to bring a restaurant experience to all over the hotel and especially within the restaurants.
And so what do you have on your menu that would like knock my socks off that I wouldn't expect to see on that kind of a menu?
Well, I think something that we're able to do is say we have a whole roasted Dover sole cooked in salt crust. We can do that in your room for you at the hotel.
And it doesn't set off the fire alarm?
Not too often.
Is there anything you can't source anymore?
Well, I think for me, it's not sourcing things that are weird or different and that people don't know about, but it's sourcing the quality of things that are in our backyard.
Such as?
Squash, chestnuts from Michigan. We get great potatoes from Green Acres in Indiana. And the list can go on and on.
Is there anything, and I always like to ask chefs this question, is there anything that when you started your menu, trying to put it together, that you put on the menu saying, boy, everybody's going to love this dish, and it died? Or no one's going to order this, and everybody did?
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me.
I think most recently we put a lettuce dish on the Rhea menu, something that everybody always wants, but us as culinarians want to do something a bit more exciting. So we did a simple lettuce dish prepared a few different ways. Grilled, roasted, caramelized, and glazed with sunchokes and jamón ibérico. And people are going nuts for it.
So that was a winner?
Yeah, that was a winner.
Okay, what tanked?
A few years ago, or about a year and a half ago, we did a foie gras pavé with cranberry and a mushroom from Oregon that's called a candy cap mushroom. And I thought it was going to be amazing. And
well, was it amazing?
It was amazing for maybe a minute. And then we just got... Not only from the guests, but from some of the staff. Not positive feedback on
it. All right, so you 86 that one.
Yeah, see you later.
Done.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the most popular dish that people are ordering right now?
Right now in Rhea, I think it's a tasting menu for sure. Everybody is always coming in there's a five-course seasonal tasting menu, and then a chef's grand tasting menu.
All right, so now I got to take you out of your restaurant, out of the hotel. Where do you like to go to eat that's not in the brochure, that's not in the guidebook, that you like to hang?
Well... I'd have to say Sun Hua up in Andersonville. They have a Peking duck that's just unbelievable.
And they just hang it on the wall for about 5 hours?
Yeah.
Is that right? That's the one that's hanging?
Yeah, you have to reserve the duck before you get there.
I always reserve my duck.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Of course, come on.
And at my table, it's always a fight for who gets the last of the skin, for sure. Yeah, it's just perfectly crispy and amazing.
Okay, so that's one.
Yep.
What about your deep dish pizza place? Or are you not a fan?
I'm honestly, me and deep dish go back and forth. Yeah. I grew up on Long Island, so
see, we're thin crust guys.
Yeah.
Come on,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
We're slice guys.
Yeah, I like my pizza by the slice for sure.
Okay, you can stay on the show now.
Okay.
I'm not a deep dish guy.
I might not feel comfortable leaving the hotel.
Can you find pizza by the slice here in thin crust in Chicago?
For sure.
Good stuff.
There's Luigi's on Clark and Deming. That's my go-to on my Monday's day off.
And that's thin crust.
Thin New York style pizza, fold it in half.
Fold it in half and eat it just like
standing up, not too hot. So
absolutely. So burn your tongue.
Yep.
And we've done that a lot.
We've done it for sure.
What's the one thing that's next online for you? Because you're a child. How old are you?
29.
With Michelin stars already.
Yeah.
You're out of control. So what is next for you?
I don't know. We're excited to find out.
Are you experimenting with food?
I think...
You called yourself a culinarist?
Culinarian.
A culinarian, excuse me. The March of the Culinarians.
I don't think I've ever said that before, but...
I like that. It's the March of the Culinarians. You see, they do the Nutcracker and then the March of the Culinarians.
Yeah, I like that.
It's kind of a holiday thing. Yeah. But is there anything you really want to experiment with?
Not necessarily. I think, you know, being able to take the next step to look for 3 stars is probably the next goal.
And something tells me you're going to get it. Danny Grant, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
That music means you're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, hey, follow Danny. We got some great thin slice pizza we got coming up in Chicago. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful first weekend in December. I'm almost shuddering saying it's December, but it is. And hope you're having a great time wherever you are. We are actually coming to you from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel in Chicago. I keep saying it. It's America's most underrated city, one of my favorite cities on the planet. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com, and we'll answer your problems right here on the air. You know, big news this week. We talked about it in the first hour. We're going to talk about it again now. The last of the major legacy airlines never to have merged and also never to have filed bankruptcy. Well, they did one of those things this week. That was American Airlines filing Chapter 11. And joining me now, someone who I actually think I can safely say saw it coming. You read about him in Portfolio.com and a number of other platforms. One of our regulars on the show, Joe Brancatelli. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Peter. How are you? I'm sorry I'm not in Chicago with you.
Listen, bottom line is, you know, when you hear the word bankruptcy, we all have that negative connotation that says, okay, they're ceasing operation. That is not what's happening here.
No, obviously not. And part of the problem is, Peter, that we no longer have quite the same negative connotation. Airlines certainly have used bankruptcy as essentially a negotiating tool, as have many other companies. This is really more than anything a legal maneuver these days, just to reorganize yourself, beat your labor unions into submission, skip out on some debt that you owe cities like Chicago for using their airport. But from the passenger point of view, things largely go on unchanged.
Well, you know, when you talk about beating labor unions into submission, the labor unions would be the first ones to tell you that over the last 20 years they've already been beaten into submission.
Oh, absolutely. We are in among the legacy carriers, which I'm sure you've defined earlier. This is a race to the bottom in what they pay people. You know, the employees at American Airlines gave huge concessions in 2003 when American claimed to be on the steps of the courthouse going to go bankrupt then. They haven't gotten that stuff back. I just saw a number that says American employs 40% fewer pilots today than they did in 2001, and 600 of the existing pilots are still on furlough. So this is not an industry that is a particularly good place to work anymore if you're a young person. This is not Pan Am, that television show, needless to say, anymore.
But it may be Pan Am. If you take this to its logical conclusion, it's a little scary. If we end up with fewer airlines and we end up with airline alliances as opposed to branded airlines with fewer planes and fewer seats, the law of supply and demand kicks in, we may get back to the days of Pan Am where people who only flew the airline were the people who were the elite, who were the privileged few.
Well, you know, this is an odd industry, Peter. I mean, unlike most others that you and I have covered in previous lives, this is what they call very capital intensive in that you need to have a lot of money to start and operate, but it's also very rich in cash flow. I mean, just think of how many tickets are sold during the day. So there is actually a lure to this business, putting aside the romance of it. I actually think when you look at the numbers, the airlines that are smartly run and look at things in a modern way, Southwest, JetBlue, are gaining market share, are profitable. you can make money in this business. The airlines that have suffered are the ones that existed before deregulation, and the guy who essentially is called the godfather of deregulation, Alfred Kahn, always expressed surprise that so many of them actually survived this long.
Well, you know, it's when we did that two-hour special on CNBC on American Airlines, which obviously needs to be updated now, you know, Robert Crandall, the former CEO, said something that was actually quite stunning on that show. I couldn't believe it would come out of his mouth. He said, look, let's be honest. The current U.S. airlines, the legacy carriers, have never earned back their capital investment since the days of the Wright brothers. He says it's a bad business.
Absolutely. From a long-term traditional, the way I first started covering business, i.e. you look at fundamentals, earnings, losses, cost, revenue, this is a terrible business. It's really never has been profitable. On the other hand, you do have an airline like Southwest that has a very definable model in that customers know exactly what they get from Southwest, every seat, every flight, every route, every day. They have never lost money. They have made money for 36 consecutive years. They pay a dividend to their stockholders. So that gives me the confidence that says if you run an airline well, you can, in fact, make money.
All right, so bottom line for anybody listening to this show who has a reservation on American, is a member of the Frequent Flyer program, count me in on that one, or wants to book the airline again, in the short term, there should be no changes.
In the short term, there's going to be absolutely no changes. I think clearly until the new year, everything goes exactly as scheduled. In fact, American will go out of its way to show you that nothing's changed. In the new year, and then looking at what the airlines call their quote-unquote summer schedule, which actually kicks in March, you're going to see some downsizing. American's going to pull out of some routes, turn some routes over to, say, British Airways or Qantas or Cathay, some of their partners. But right now, through the holidays, everybody's fine.
And the only thing we have to talk about, and maybe not on this particular show this week, but you and I will definitely talk about it down the road, is the future of the Frequent Flyer program, because I mean, if you're going to have fewer airlines and fewer brands and less competition, there seems to be less initiative for the airlines to maintain an efficiently run frequent flyer program that benefits their customers simply because there's no need for it anymore.
Well, it's interesting, Peter. I was actually thinking about this just today because obviously I write primarily for business travelers who live and die within the programs. I would have said that was true 10 years ago, but we've had a fundamental shift in what is a frequent flyer program. These things now are essentially bank programs. The bank, every airline is tied to a bank. American is tied to Citibank.
Right.
United, Continental tied to Chase. Delta tied to American Express, which, by the way, is now a bank. Okay. There is such pressure to acquire credit card holders and charge card holders that they've brought a lot of energy into the programs and a lot of points. The problem is going to be, if you look at a frequency program strictly as a way to get free seats, we may run out of free seats to give them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're going to have to figure out another way to redeem miles, because right now, if you take a look at just the books of American Airlines, forget the fact they only have a market cap of about $600 million. Their frequent flyer program has a market valuation that far dwarfs the actual value of the airline.
Oh, absolutely. And the reason why that is, Peter, and in fairness to the folks at American, they run what you and I would consider the cleanest program. They're most conservative with how they give you miles, but they're also fairly liberal in how you can get award seats. And virtually every other frequent flyer program or hotel frequent guest program tends to be run by former American people. I just noticed this the other day. You go down the list of the other programs, they're all alumni of Advantage.
Unbelievable.
But I think we're okay going forward, as long as you start looking at merchandise and hotels and other things.
Well, go get those free toasters with your mileage. Joe Brancatelli, of course, you read him on Portfolio.com and many other platforms. Thanks, Joe. We'll be back with more from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel in Chicago. Cash in those miles right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour on this first weekend of December, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel, otherwise known as just the Aqua, here in Chicago. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones by now, you better know what to do. You're going to email me with your name, question, phone number, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Of course, you email me to peter at petergreenberg.com. Speaking of that, let's talk about those emails. I've been promising you all show we're going to get to them, and now we are, from Jeff in Kentucky. On a cruise we were on recently, the occupants from the cabin next door would often keep their children unattended. Love it when that happens. Our headboard would shake from the running, jumping, and slamming of the balcony door. Guest service was notified, but they acted like we were the problem for letting them know the situation. How would you have handled this issue? Very simple. You don't just go to guest service. You go to the purser. You go to the cruise director and say, listen, we're having a problem. Either they have to be quiet or you have to move our cabin. And you know what? Unless your ship was totally full, they should have done that. And if they don't do that, then you need to have a paper trail of who you talk to, first and last names, please, and titles, and put it in writing, send it to the cruise line, and guess what? Copy me. Then we get into it. And what happens then is one of two things. Either they'll adjust it in terms of a discount on your next cruise, or they might even give you a refund or onboard credits. Bottom line is they didn't respond, and that is the first problem in service. You see, the definition of great service is not when they deliver service. It's when they recover, when service doesn't happen. And these guys obviously did a very poor job of recovering. In fact, they ignored you. Here's one from Bonnie in Jackson, Mississippi. We've been lucky enough to have done some extensive, wonderful trips all over the world. These are all done with traveler's checks, no credit cards. Now we're about to start again and still do not want to use credit cards. Hard enough dealing with hacking and personal info here in the States. Are traveler's checks acceptable in different countries, including Cuba, or is there another way to go? Well, this is a sore point with me. Let's call traveler's checks what they are. It's an unsecured loan you're giving the traveler's check company, right? You're buying traveler's checks, and they're hoping you're not going to use them. It's an unsecured loan, and it's an interest-free loan. It's perfect for them. That's why they make so much money on you. And why do they give you that handy-dandy little wallet with the traveler's checks inside so that when you come back, you put them in your dresser drawer, and they sit there, so they make even more money on the fact that you're not using them. Here's the problem. We live in a much different world now. If you want to travel with some traveler's checks for total emergency use only, fine. I'd much rather figure out which ATM cards don't charge you to use overseas ATM machines, and there are those cards that don't, and then you use your ATM card to get out the cash you need only on that day at the exchange rate that the bank is giving their best customers on that day. You're only taking out what you need, and you're not getting hit with commissions on both sides of that transaction when you're changing the money and when you're changing it back. That's what I would do. So I would use a debit card that's attached to a bank or a financial institution that does not charge you for using foreign ATM machines or even U.S. Domestic ATM machines, and those cards do exist. Here's one from Chuck in Nashville, and Chuck says, I would really like to take a cruise, but I travel alone, and that usually doubles the price. I'm also retired military. If there are any discounts, can you make a suggestion? Well, a lot of cruise lines actually have a military discount. Believe, and they don't know about it. Carnival has one. It's called an early save rate with it, and you can make it up to 4 months in advance. Princess Cruise Lines also has a military discount, but it actually goes towards an onboard credit, so food, merchandise, etc. Or forget the military discount entirely and look at what some of the smarter cruise lines are doing in terms of no longer discriminating against solo travelers like you. Norwegian, for example, on their new ship, the Epic, designed 128 cabins just for solo travelers where you're not having to pay that single supplement. It's actually priced just for you. It's a little bit more than a single cabin for two people, but you're not doubling the price. Guess what? They sell out on almost every cruise because there's such a huge audience out there of single people who want a cruise and shouldn't have to be beaten up because they're not two people to the cabin. So check that out. And isn't it interesting that all the other cruise lines that poo-pooed that idea are now redoing their ships to actually start marketing solo travel cabin options, including Royal Caribbean, and I'm sure Carnival will be coming down the road with that. So that's what I do. Here's one from Virginia. Here's Virginia in Florida. Are star ratings something something's? Oh, excuse me. I'm gonna actually learn how to pronounce this. Are star ratings something someone needs to look at when booking a hotel? The answer is absolutely not. You know why? Because what are the criteria used for those star ratings? If some hotel gets a five-star rating because they have a golf course and I don't play golf, why is that a five-star hotel for me? Right? Who's doing the ratings? And overseas, I have to warn you that in many cases, a star rating is only reflective of a tax designation of the most expensive hotel in town. A five-star hotel means it's the most expensive hotel in town. Not the best, not the nicest, not the loveliest, just the most expensive. So that's my answer there. Joining us on the phone now, I promised you a little weather report, and that's our good friend Annie Banas, who's the executive editor for SmarterTravel.com. Here we are in Chicago, where people think there are only two seasons every year, winter and construction, and I'm a big fan of off-season travel, and I don't mind coming to Chicago in February. People think I'm nuts? No, I love it. What about you, Annie?
Well, you know, off-season travel has a lot of benefits, and often you can save money, but I think what we're talking about here is a little bit of a different type of off-season travel.
You're talking about serious weather travel.
Serious weather travel, exactly. Things like storm chasing or climbing up to a mountain that has some of the worst weather in the entire world right here in the United States.
All right. Have you done it?
I have actually climbed Mount Washington on the Cog Railway, but not. I can't say that I've done it in the off season, so I haven't felt the whipping winds that reportedly you can feel while you're up at the top there.
Well, you know, listen, it comes under the category of thrill-seeking travel. People always want to push the envelope. If they don't want to skydive or bungee jump, they want to go chase a tornado or, like, get as close to lightning as they can without becoming fried.
Exactly. And with storm chasing, you know, it's really cool. These are people that actually get in Jeeps. They have GPS devices that they can track storms. They don't go away from the storm. They go towards them. There is an element of safety to it because you can always, if it gets really bad, get out of there, but it's the whole point is to see storms in action with these tours.
All right. So, and there are seasons to this, obviously, you know, we're not
right.
In Kansas anymore. Uh-oh, it's Dorothy. Uh-oh, it's the Wizard of Oz. But bottom line is, I've seen some of these storm chasing guys. You said they go close to it. They go very close to it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, if you're somebody that's a little too adventurous for you, there are other ways to explore these, you know, type of great storm weather without, you know, getting too involved in nature. You know, for example, you can go up to Torino, British Columbia, and do what's called storm watching, where you could sit in a beautiful hotel and see these great waves coming in. I think they also do storm watching in places like, you know, Washington and Oregon as well. So you can go all the way up to Vancouver Island, or you can, you know, stay at stateside. And it's a really great experience that you can be cozy on the inside but watch this beautiful nature outside.
That's my kind of storm chasing.
I agree.
Get the fire in the fireplace. Let me watch the waves crash over the mountains and, you know, throw in a little alcohol. You're storm chasing.
Yeah, that's the best way to go. And there are some really cool things you can do, too. Like, you know, there's a lot of volcanoes that are active all over the world. And the one that comes to mind the most, there's this one in Montserrat that has been, it basically sends ash on the island. This is in the Caribbean pretty frequently. But you can take, like, little plane or helicopter tours and get to see it from above, which is a totally different angle. And now it's not necessarily, you know, weather. It's more kind of natural disaster waiting to happen. But it's still a really awesome experience to see, you know, some of the great wildness of nature.
It's true. And, you know, you can actually, even in Hawaii, you can go to the Volcano National Park there and get very up close with the lava. I mean, you know, and smell that sulfur.
The sulfur. Towards that smell, right?
Oh, man, rotten eggs supreme, but at least you have that experience of seeing that lava start to flow.
So true. And I think also in Costa Rica, too, you can go up to an observatory and see some of the volcano activity down there.
And, of course, you know, there are limits and levels of the thrill-seeking behavior. I mean, sometimes you can watch it from a distance. Sometimes it gets even crazier than that. And you can actually track bad weather all year round. You just don't want to end up in your own version of the perfect storm, that's all.
No, that's for sure.
And more of this, of course, you can find on Annie's website, which is smartertravel.com. And Annie, is there one place in the world that you really want to go track some bad weather just for you? Is there
one?
You
know, I have to say, I've been wanting to go to Torino on Vancouver Island for a very long time. There's a great inn called the Wiccanish Inn up there that just looks absolutely beautiful.
I've been up there. I've been up there. Yes, you should do it. I've been up there. I've seen it. And talk about a room with a view. You are right up close and personal with that water.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds amazing. And for, so people know, though, that's usually around November or December, so now is the perfect time of year to see those storm watching in the British Columbia.
I love it. Annie Bannis, thanks for joining us once again, Annie. And call us from the Wiccanish Inn when you're actually having a few beers and watching this, okay?
I sure will.
All right, we really appreciate that. That's Annie Bannis, the executive editor for SmarterTravel.com. And when we come back, we're going to take a little history tour of the Chicago you thought you knew, but trust me, you don't. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Radisson Blue, the Aqua, right here in Chicago, right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Aqua Hotel. It's actually part of the Radisson Blue Guys here in Chicago, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know what you've got to do. You email me. We read some earlier in the show. We'll be reading some more later. Email me to Peter Greenberg at, well, actually, Peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. It's one thing to say that Chicago is America's most underrated big city, and then, which, by the way, I believe is true. And then it's another thing, when you get here, even for guys like me who think they know it all, to realize how much I don't know about Chicago. And joining me now is somebody who knows just a little bit about that. She's a great historian here of the city and the author of a book called The Jewel of the Gold Coast. Her name's Sally Kambach. Hey, Sally.
How are you?
I'm okay. So for somebody listening to the show who's never been to Chicago, which, by the way, it has to be most people because they just fly over it or they land at O'Hare and think they've been in Chicago, which is the big joke.
Exactly.
What's the first thing you'd want to show them that would, like, open their eyes to what they thought they didn't know or thought they,
well,
thought they did know?
I think typically you'll go to all the museums, but I would take you to the house museums. And the first one I'd take you is to the Glesner House on Prairie Avenue, which is the first silk stocking district in Chicago, where Marshall Field lived and George Pullman. And it was built in finished in 1886 by Henry Hobson Richardson. Still standing today and unique because it has the original furniture and Mrs. Glesner wrote a journal every day. So it's an insight in how people lived in Chicago at different times in different neighborhoods.
Especially if it was finished in 1887, then basically we got to see the turn of the century in there.
You did. And then you move a little bit further north and you go to the Dree House Museum. Thank you, Richard Driehaus, a great Chicago philanthropist, who recently restored the Nickerson Mansion, and it was always dubbed the Marble Palace. And
because?
It's because it is filled with 17 different varieties of marble, as well as seven different varieties of wood.
Right.
And it has been beautifully restored. I actually give a walking tour of the neighborhood, which was originally called McCormickville, because of the number of McCormick family members who settled in a very small geographical area. But the bones of the houses, there are actual houses still in McCormickville, but this is right around the Peninsula Hotel. So if you walked area,
yes, that's right.
It's very commercial, and you aren't looking. So I always
love... It's a surprise.
And the Tree Studios are still there, built in 1896, in the backyard of Lambert Tree's house.
In these last, let's say, 80 years, right? What do you think has shaped Chicago the most?
Well, originally, location, location, location. Then post-Chicago fire, great architects storming to Chicago to rebuild it. And to continue to rebuild it, because we're actually in a building right now that is an example of that.
Walk me through the history of this hotel, because this didn't start as a hotel.
I don't know the history of this whole hotel. I do know other buildings in the city. I was just thinking about this today, that started out in one direction as an apartment building or a commercial building, and are being used differently today.
Well, you're describing this hotel.
Exactly. And one of them is the Carson Perry Scott building. So I have to bring that up because, you know, Louis Sullivan. And it was completely restored by Gunny Harbo, a great restoration architect. And today, guess what is going to move in? Target.
No, Target.
Oh, excuse me. But one other house museum.
Wait, I got to back you up.
Okay.
That doesn't make me feel good that Target is moving in there. Are they going to maintain the architectural design of the building, or are they just going to have specials?
No, the building was restored, and it was such a large space. It really required somebody like Target to move in. And, you know, I'm just happy that the buildings are still standing, such as, for instance, the Shriners Medina Temple. What is in there today? Bloomingdale's Home Store. But it's there.
So people still go to worship at the Bloomingdale's altar.
Exactly.
Okay, just double checking that there's a little religious bent to that, yes.
And one other house museum I just want to mention is in the Gold Coast. And
now explain what the Gold Coast is.
The Gold Coast is actually from Oak Street to North Avenue, just short of Lincoln Park. So it wasn't a terribly large geographical area. But Potter Palmer walked north, and in 1880, developed this land, which was originally called a frog's pond. And people labeled it the Frog's Folly when he originally did it.
Yeah, but if you're living on the Gold Coast now, you're doing okay.
Today, the Gold Coast is still as popular as it was when Potter Palmer built his castle in 1885.
Amazing.
But, you know, interestingly enough, Prairie Avenue has been rejuvenated, where the Glesner House is. So that is now becoming more of a residential area.
Yeah, it's too bad you don't know anything about Chicago. Sally Combat, wonderful historian. Thank you for walking me through all that stuff. That's great. I want to go on a tour with you, okay?
I'd love to take you.
All right. And also the author of The Jewel of the Gold Coast. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Aqua, brand new hotel here in Chicago, part of the Radisson chain, when we're back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
17 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Chicago in the Aqua Hotel, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll answer it right here on the air. We got more coming in the next hour of your emails as well. I've always said that if you have just started dating somebody and you want to find out if you're really going to, you know, continue as a couple, just travel with them. And you'll know within 15 seconds, once you get on that plane, whether you're going to marry them or never speak to them again for the rest of your life. My next guest has gone beyond that. She started a great website called travelswith2.com, so something tells me she's still with the guy. Her name, Melanie Walden. Hey, Melanie.
Hello, Peter.
Are you still with him?
I am, 17 years.
Okay. And you're still talking to him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just talked to him this morning.
Unbelievable. It's amazing what happens with a conversation.
So, amazing.
So now, do you guys always travel together?
No, we travel together about 60% of the time. It's a job for me now, so I'm often traveling with friends or other writers, but my favorite trips are with my husband.
And I always say this, I mean, if you can adjust to a trip with the person you're traveling with, considering everything that's thrown in your face, you can basically hang out with them anywhere.
Pretty much. I'd agree with that entirely.
So Give me an example of the experiences that you've had with your husband on the trips that you've done where you were really challenged and what you did about them.
I would say that my worst experience was deciding to take a drive outside of Olympia in Greece. It's the middle of nowhere to begin with, and taking a drive kind of means that you're driving towards pretty much nothing. We didn't realize that, and he didn't want to stop for directions. I know this doesn't sound
common. Gee, I'm shocked to hear this. I'm shocked.
Shocking. It got to be 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and it kind of got to the place where we weren't speaking to each other, and we weren't sure whether or not we should just turn back and try to find our hotel, stay where we were. It was getting dark. It was the longest period of time we've not spoken to one another. It was about 8 or 9 hours, and we're still together. It was just ugly.
Okay, I have to ask the obvious question. What finally broke the ice after 9 hours?
He was listening to something really cool on his iPod, and he wanted me to hear it.
Do you remember the name of the song?
No! Which makes me really annoyed all of a sudden.
Of course.
It should be our song.
It better be your song. Okay, let me switch gears on this. When was there a time you were traveling with him where, because of where you were, in the most unexpected way, you basically reinforced your entire relationship?
I would say last year we celebrated my 40th birthday on safari in Africa, which was a life dream for me. And my husband hadn't been extremely excited about going in the way that I was extremely excited. We were in Botswana in the Okavango Delta watching a bunch of elephants walk across a field. It was nothing complicated. He just looked at me, I looked at him, and I knew that I had just changed his life. He had changed mine by bringing me. It was a wonderful moment.
And is there a sort of a test that you take or that you actually ask other people to take before they're going to travel with somebody else?
No, because everybody's style of travel is different. The only thing that I ever suggest to somebody is do not veer from that which you are good at home. Do not try out a new skill. Do not. Like,
really?
If you're the person that navigates in your relationship, do not give that job to your partner while you are traveling somewhere far away. Like, if you're really great with money, be the money person while you're traveling. So that's sort of just stick to what you know while you're traveling. You can learn how to zip line. You can learn how to drive on the wrong side of the road. But the simple stuff, stick to what you know.
All right. And did you ever veer from that advice yourself?
No, Peter, of course not.
Don't you lie to me. Come on. You did, didn't you?
It's entirely possible that I once decided to be the person that would arrange for snacks and make sure that we would get to the train on time. And, yeah, that did not go well with the blood sugar crashing and the missing of the train.
Life Lessons from Melanie Walden. By the way, the name of her site is travelswith2.com, and she still handles the money, but probably no longer handles the snacks.
No, I certainly do not.
Okay, thanks, Melanie. We really appreciate that. Again, travelswith2.com. Follow her advice, and maybe you'll still stay with the person you actually started to go with. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide with a trip to one of my favorite museums ever, and it's right here in Chicago, especially the submarine, which I just get such a kick out of, especially how they got it in the museum.
Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Earlier in the show, we were talking to Deputy Mayor Mark Angelson about what he thought makes Chicago great. And, of course, he mentioned all the museums. And one in particular, to me at least, is the Museum of Science and Industry. I always go there every chance I get in Chicago because the exhibits there are just nothing short of to die for. And one of them, if you're like me and you grew up with every World War II movie when you're a kid watching it, When somebody told me they had an actual U-boat inside the museum, I said, I am going. And I couldn't believe it when I got there. And the most amazing thing to me was how they got it there to begin with. How did they get it inside this museum? And joining me now, somebody who probably knows the answer to that, he's the Vice President of Exhibits and Collections at the Museum of Science and Industry, Kurt Honfellner, right? I got that, Honfellner?
Good to be here, Peter, yes.
I got it right, okay.
That's right.
All right, so how'd you get that? So first of all, I know the answer a little bit, but I want you to tell me, how the heck did you get that submarine inside a museum in Chicago? First of all, talk about where that submarine was when it was captured.
Sure. Well, the submarine was captured on Sunday morning, June 4th, 1944. That happens to be 2 days before the Normandy invasion, and it was captured by Admiral Dan Gallery off the coast of North Africa. It was a quiet Sunday morning. He says in his book that his guys had been up late the previous night, and the last thing they expected to see bob up to the surface was a German submarine. Lo and behold, that morning, Frenchie to Blue Jay, I've got one. All hell broke loose. Over the next half hour, they captured the sub. Naval intelligence.
The Germans tried to scuttle it, didn't
That's
they?
That's right. Germans tried to scuttle it. They pulled the cork, which was called the sea strainer.
Oh, it's called it's actually called the seacock.
That's right.
Or.
And when the boarding
aren't you
party,
impressed that
were,
I knew that? Come on,
okay. I'm very impressed.
Okay.
When the boarding party got on board the submarine, it was already listing in the water. It had taken on 3 or 4 feet of water. Another 5 minutes, and it would have gone to the bottom with the boarding party on it. But they were able to. They reacted quickly. They put the plug back in the hole. And over the next several days, they got the submarine under tow. Gallery was given strict.
And they took all the Germans prisoners.
They took the Germans prisoners. There were 59 German crew members. 58 survived. One was killed on the deck during the battle. And then right after they seized the sub, Gallery got strict orders that he was not to tow it to Casablanca because it was 2 days before Normandy. They were afraid they'd tip the Germans off, and the Germans would recognize that we had access to their Enigma codes. So he was ordered to tow it all the way to Bermuda, which was about 2,500 miles away.
And the crew said, vacation, party! Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, June in Bermuda, not a bad deal.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, okay, so now we got the sub. It's U-Boat 505, right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Okay. How did it get from Bermuda to Chicago?
Well, there's a long story there, but to make the story short, the boat was decommissioned, obviously. It was carefully searched for the intelligence hull, which was significant. Not only the Enigma machines, but an acoustic torpedo, which was the most advanced torpedo in the world at that time. And then during the latter stages of the war, it was used along the East Coast to do war bond funding. Made its way. It was dry docked up in New Hampshire after the war. It was falling apart. Gallery went to the city fathers and said, you know, we really ought to preserve this submarine. He convinced them to put up some money. It was brought to Chicago. And in 1954.
Well, he just went up and said, hey, let's move it to Chicago. And they
that's
said,
right.
Okay.
Well, I think he made a pretty, he was a persuasive guy, and I think he made a persuasive argument. And so it was towed literally down the length of Lake Michigan, across Lakeshore Drive, and it was situated on the east side of the building. And for 50-plus years, we took close to 25 million people through it in the late 1990s. We did a structural assessment of it. The engineers came back, and they said, if you leave it outdoors, you may get another 10 years out of it, and then it's going to be structurally unfit to put people on. So the board and our administration at the museum decided to launch a big fundraising campaign. We bought it inside, built a beautiful interpretive center for it, and it's one of the two most popular exhibits in the museum.
And the cool thing is, for those of you who are listening who have kids, you do overnights for kids on it.
Oh, absolutely. We do overnights. We do tours all day long. We put 1,000 people a day on the submarine. You know this story because you've seen it.
Yeah.
We recreate those pivotal moments on the morning of June 4th as though you were a German crew member incurring that fire, and it's a first person event.
There's
compelling.
War footage of that ship being boarded.
Yes, there's war footage of the ship being boarded. Everything in the exhibit's authentic. Some of the recreations of the battle scene we actually shot off the coast of Catalina, and then we matched that footage with archival footage. But the dialogue is completely accurate.
Amazing stuff. I'm telling you, just I can't get enough of that, and people need to see it. And if you're at all claustrophobic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Or tall.
I mean, what you should do is first go out and get a Netflix copy of Das Boot.
Exactly.
Watch that movie, then go to the museum.
That's right.
Fair
In
enough?
Fact, some of the background sound on the submarine is from that movie. We got permission to use it. So
it's amazing. When you want to see what they lived under those conditions being underwater so often with no, I mean, there's no space.
No, there's no space. It was 100 degrees. Most of these kids by the end of the war were literally that, 16, 17 years old, and 80% of them perished.
Wow. So amazing story. And that's just part of what you've got at the Museum of Science and Industry here in Chicago. Kurt Hahnfellner, thank you so much for joining me. That was just great.
Thank you, Peter.
Man, I could talk all day. Well, I just did talk all day about the submarine, didn't I?
Yes.
I did. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Peter Greenberg with you. We'll be right back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Go check out that sub right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world.
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be this first weekend in December. Get out your maps. We are at 41 degrees, 51 minutes north, 87 degrees, 39 minutes west. We are coming to you from Chicago, and in particular, the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel, brand new hotel that just opened up here in what I like to call America's most underrated big city. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We got lots of emails to get to, and I will do that in just a second. You know it's one of my big pet peeves about ancillary fees and the airlines charging for everything short of breathing, especially when it comes to luggage. And you are going to travel with luggage, you know, what kind are you going to buy? And you might want to remember that we've just celebrated a rather interesting anniversary, the 40th anniversary of wheeled luggage. That's right, 40 years ago, a guy was lugging two large suitcases through the Aruba airport when he noticed a worker rolling machinery on a skid. He went, aha, eureka, we should put wheels on this thing. And that's what started it. And then later on in 1987, an airline pilot, a guy named Bob Plath, went a step further. He designed a rectangular bag with a vertical back, two wheels, and an extendable handle. That became the rollerboard. And these days, of course, I don't know if there's a single bag that's sold without wheels, which raises other issues, because just because it has wheels doesn't necessarily mean it's portable. It may mean it's transportable. I mean, if some people could put a dead moose on wheels, they'd call it a rollerboard. You know, and then they'll try to get it in the overhead compartment. It's crazy. But there's good wheels and bad wheels. And let me tell you what I did a couple of years ago. I decided to test which were the best bags, and I came up with my own test. And this is what I did. And you can still see it online. It's one of the all-time great videos because you can't make this up. I went out and I bought the 7 top-selling brands of luggage in America. And if you don't know that, that when the bags are sold to the retail operations, they're actually shipped, and each one of them is shipped in an individual cardboard box. So what you saw on television was me with 7 cardboard boxes. You then saw me open each box and take out brand new bags. And these are bags like Tumi and American Tourister and Samsonite and Victorinox and the brands that you know. You then saw me, and you had no idea where I was. I was just in a nondescript room. You then saw me open up each bag. And in each bag, I put in a pineapple, a coconut, and an orange. And I closed up each bag. And the next thing you saw was me walking in one bag at a time. We shot this with like three or four different camera crews. We had timers and a stopwatch. And you saw me walk in to the elephant cage at the New Orleans Zoo, the Audubon Zoo, at feeding time. And I just put the bag there. Now, the elephants have a keen sense of smell. They will do anything to get in these bags. And they did. And the video that we shot, I mean, some of these bags lasted, I'm not making this up, 7 seconds. 7 seconds. These elephants, and boom, the elephants were in the bag. And then some of the elephants, like, you know, struggled a little bit more. And the most expensive bag didn't win. Nope, Toomey did not win. The bag that won was Victorinox. But that, like the American Tourister and the Delsey and the Samsonite, those are the 7 second bags. Those hard sided bags, boom, just destroyed. Victorinox won. And you ought to check out that video. It was pretty interesting. And interestingly enough, we looked at like Consumer Reports testing later on. We actually matched it. We didn't know. And so I'm not suggesting that you go to the elephant cage every time you buy a bag, but you know what? Durability matters. And so does the warranty. Every bag, and here's the biggest scam going. Every bag says they have a warranty. Most of them call it a limited warranty, and they're not kidding. It's limited to basically looking at the bag and realizing you have no warranty. That's the limitation. However, there are some companies that actually tell the truth. And one of them, I found out recently, because it happened to me, was Briggs & Riley. They actually have a lifetime warranty. And you'll see all sorts of caveats in their warranty language that say, well, if the airline damages your bag, we're not responsible. We're not responsible for wear and tear. Yeah, somebody has to define for me the words wear and tear. Because if it's a lot of tear, something's wrong with the bag. But Briggs & Riley, they actually offer a true lifetime warranty. And I really destroy my bags because I fly so often. Well, guess what? The handle broke in the Briggs & Riley bag. I mean, just it was gone. So I decided, and this is 3 years after I got it. So I sent it to them. Guess what? It was fixed and back to me the next day. That is a great warranty. And so if you're going to buy a bag, especially bags that are relatively expensive, where you have a considerable investment, you want the bag to last more than a month. And you want a bag with low center of gravity. If you buy a bag with wheels and it doesn't have a low center of gravity, you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to trip over the bag or the bag's going to fall on you. You want a bag that can actually stand on its own with the wheels and not fall over. And you want a bag that doesn't weigh more than the stuff you're putting in it. You know, leather luggage has limitations. Why? It weighs too much. And last but not least, you want a bag that's got a warranty. And I got to, like, hats off to the guys at Briggs & Riley because their warranty actually works. And they didn't just do it because it was me. They didn't know me. I just called them up and sent them the bag, and the bag came back. That's not a bad deal. And considering that's the only thing that broke in 3 years, it's a pretty good bag. The other thing about the bags that gets me angry are the handles. Just because it's got a rollerboard handle, if it's not fastened properly to the bag, the handle's going to bend, break, and just completely fall apart. You want a sturdy handle. And you want a handle that's, by the way, not inside the bag, but stitched on the outside of the bag so it doesn't take up all the interior space of the bag itself. When you open up that bag and you see that, you know, one quarter of the available cubic footage space in that bag is taken up by the wrapping around the handle, well, what have you bought? Nothing but a handle that is going to fall over. So there you go. When we come back, we're in Chicago. And as I said, the most underrated big city in America and a major hub. I fly through O'Hare at least 5 times a month. And if I'm lucky, I actually get out of O'Hare and come into the city. And we'll be talking to our next guest, John Hilkovich, who's the transportation reporter of the Chicago Tribune. And if you're going to be in Chicago, you better be reporting on transportation because everybody comes through Chicago. And later on in the show, all your emails, and there are actually some really big doozies up there of people with some serious problems that need to be solved. And interestingly enough, most of those problems deal with what? Failure to disclose. Either failure to disclose from the transportation or travel provider themselves, or failure to actually ask the right questions before you actually sign on the dotted line, which raises the other question, why don't more people have a conversation? Online has its limitations, especially if something goes wrong. Who are you going to call? I have the answer. Ghostbusters. You need to have a conversation. We'll be talking, speaking of conversation, with John Hilkovich when we come back with Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel here in Chicago right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel here in Chicago. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We're going to speak about some of those emails in a second. And as I do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work in Japan and Haiti. Let me remind you, the rebuilding effort in Haiti is going to be at least another 8 years. They need your help. In Western China, in Chile, and in Christchurch, New Zealand, all of those locations, victims of either earthquakes or tsunamis in the last 22 months, and worthy of your attention, not just your wallet, your attention. What I mean by that is you can actually go there on that list and figure out how you can structure, very easily, by the way, your own volunteer vacation to get up close and personal and really help out in those efforts in those locations. It is not difficult. It is everything you can bring to the party that you're not even realizing it, whether you're a butcher, a baker, or a candlestick maker. It doesn't matter. And if you're listening to the show and you have a kid over the age of 8, in many of these cases, those programs allow you to take your kids. What an amazing, life-changing experience that would be as well. I mentioned it earlier in the show. We're going to be joined by John Hilkovich, who's the transportation reporter for the Chicago Tribune. So, Jeff, if you're listening to me back east, why don't you just give us a little introductory audio?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
That was beautiful. Of course, we all remember that from our good pal and just recently departed Leslie Nielsen from Airplane. John, as the transportation reporter, I mean, Chicago is such a hub. And there's, you know, and I'm not talking about getting stuck on the Eisenhower or getting stuck on the on 94, or 90, I should say. I'm talking about just getting around, right? Because, you write a weekly column about getting around. Because if you know what you're doing in this town, there's just so many opportunities you can do, and it's very easy. It's a well-managed opportunity in terms of transportation.
Absolutely, Peter. I mean, we really are the transportation hub of the country, both by air, by land, and by lake. it's a wealth of opportunities for people. We do have aging infrastructure and issues that we have to deal with.
That's called character.
Yeah, that's called character, except when, there's a subway fire or a derailment, then it gets a little more serious.
Sure. I mean, I should also say, and I'm not just sucking up to you, but you were awarded the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, in 2001, I co-led a series called Gateway to Gridlock, which was about the meltdown of the commercial aviation industry due to congestion and the lack of...
And I remember reading that. In fact, I still have a copy of that, believe it or not. And a very great series it was, because here's the sad part about it. That was 10 years ago, and how much of that is still taking place today?
Well, we still have the same problem. The only saving grace is that capacity hasn't come back. That, yes, people have returned to flying since September 11th, but not at the record levels we saw in the late 1990s and before the attacks. So we're really ill-prepared for that surge that the FAA is predicting over the next decade and a half.
And, by the way, guess where that surge is going to come from? Not from Peoria, not from Nebraska, not from New York City. It's going to be coming from India and China.
Absolutely. China is building how many dozens of airports every year?
How about this? China is actually building. You want to get scared? They've already built 40 new airports. That's number one. Number two, they're building right now at the rate of 2 Chicagos a year in terms of new cities that they're actually creating. Think about that. I mean, you're covering one of them.
Absolutely. So between, China, the rest of Asia, and the Middle East, which is gearing up in a big way, we just saw the big purchase of the 777s by Emirates Airlines from Boeing what, an $18 billion deal. You know, the Middle East wants to be the hub between Asia and the West.
And for those people who have access to a map and who listen to the show and actually use a map, if you actually look at the map and you want to go from New York City to Perth, it's easier to fly it from New York to Dubai than to try to go on the West Coast.
Right. And those Arab countries are counting on that, not just for connections, but for people to stop and enjoy their cities and spend money.
Although it's sort of come full circle twice now, John, because let me explain. Initially, they thought they were going to be a destination. So they built to the destination, and not many people came, and yet they had the infrastructure built up. So then I said, well, we've got this huge airline with this huge network. Let's make it a hub so that people could just go through here to get somewhere else. And then maybe they'll discover us on the way. And that's really what's going on now.
Absolutely. And Chicago is trying to gear up. I mean, we have a $15 billion O'Hare expansion program that's just finishing up the first
phase. Does that include another runway?
It includes several new runways. Unfortunately, so far, we've only built one runway. There's an agreement to complete a second, which is underway, and then a third.
Now, would you get mad at me if I'm telling you that I'm still mad that they closed Meg's?
I'm mad too. I mean, personally, I'm mad. As a reporter, I have to be objective.
I mean, where we are right now, you could actually look out the window and see that old airport. And the last mayor of this town waited till nobody was looking one night and did what?
Well, Mayor Daley, in the middle of the night, just raised MIGs. He sent in the bulldozer and
they chopped up the runway.
Chopped up the one runway there. No FAA approval. No advance warning. And, you know, the FAA basically, it was a slap on the wrist. It was a very small fine. And we lost really a great downtown airport where people could land and be within minutes of their destination.
And why did he do that?
Well, this was after the 9/11 attacks, and he thought MIGs could be a launch pad for terrorist attacks. Small plane loaded with explosives would go flying into the Sears Tower or into the John Hancock Building, you know, despite the fact that you couldn't put enough explosives in a plane to do more than break some windows.
And not only that, but the only act of terrorism would be if the actual, you know, the Bears would actually win, and maybe somebody would actually like fly over Soldier Field, you know.
Yeah, and this was done at the time when, you know, O'Hare was the poster child for congestion and such. So it was sort of ironic that at a time we needed more air capacity in Chicago, the mayor closed an airport.
And where is Meg's now? What's there now?
Well, it's a park. It's a butterfly park, and we have concerts there in the summer. Former Mayor Daley's wife, Maggie, wanted it that way, and the mayor pretty much granted her wish.
Basically, the only thing flying over Meg's now is butterflies.
Butterflies and seagulls, Peter.
Okay. Well, we all know how seagulls contribute to the advancement of Western civilization.
That's right.
Oh, God.
So the unfortunate thing is really we could have had an airport coexist with this park venue. I mean, I'm all for expanding the lakefront and such, but we could have had both.
Now, you realize what the secret third airport here is in Chicago, don't you?
The secret third airport, well,
It's called Milwaukee.
Yeah. Oh, that's the functional one.
Yes.
Yes. And it's a great airport.
It is. And if you take a look at the parking lot at Mitchell Field in Milwaukee, you'll see one-third of the cars have Illinois plates. They know something.
Absolutely. People who live in, especially the northern suburbs, that's their go-to airport. And Milwaukee promotes it that way. They say, you know, their slogan is, end the ORD deal, O-R-D deal.
And is there an ORD deal? There is.
There is. O'Hare and Midway are at the bottom of the list for on-time departures through the first 8 months of this year. So despite the new runway at O'Hare, despite the decreased capacity, we still have a huge congestion and delay problem.
Now, isn't that interesting? When airlines are cutting capacities and cutting flights, you still are delayed.
Well, because we haven't built a runway at O'Hare since the early 70s, since the one that opened up in 2008. So we're still really behind the eight ball.
Is the answer always just another runway?
Oh, no. I don't think we could build our way out of congestion. I think the airlines have to be smarter, excuse me, about scheduling and not scheduling the way they do.
Okay, here's my question, because you're the ace transportation reporter here. If you and I went out to the airport authority here in Chicago and said, on the runways you have that are operational in any given day, assuming phenomenally great weather, no interference whatsoever, no delays, right? How many takeoffs could you handle in a 60-minute period? And I think the answer is somewhere around 28 or 29, because you have to have at least 2 or 3 minutes of separation between takeoffs.
Yeah, I mean, in the heyday, O'Hare did handle up to 100, 120 operations an hour.
But I'm talking about per runway.
Oh, per runway, yeah.
Okay, 28, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So why are the airlines allowed to schedule 42 departures in the hour? You can't, the math doesn't work. And nobody's slapping them on the wrist by saying, guys, You can take off at 8:07, 8:11, but you can't take off at 8:15 because he has to do that. You know, if not everybody can want to take off at 8 o'clock in the morning, you can't do it.
Right, but the competitive environment is such, and you know, we got to decide whether we're going to be in a regulatory environment or a non-regulatory.
Okay, here's my suggestion. What you do is you don't tell the airlines where they can fly. You don't tell the airlines what equipment they can fly. They can fly a Captain Skippy flight or a 747 or an A380. I don't care. But you say to American Airlines, you have 8:07, United has 8:11. You know, Delta has 8:14, and that's where those are your departure slots in the 8 o'clock hour, and put in there what you want. Mm-hmm. Guess what would happen? It would work.
It would work. Well, I think that's seen pretty radical by some, but the Obama administration is attempting to implement some control through the tarmac rule.
So, John, when are we taking over? When are we going to take over and just run this thing?
I think we could. Let's do it.
Okay, you quit the Tribune, I'll quit the radio show, and we're going to run O'Hare.
I mean, we've had aviation commissioners here in Chicago who have no transportation background. I think you and I could do it much better. Let's go.
Okay, so are we announcing that right now?
Right now.
Oh, we're in big trouble.
Okay. All we need is Rahm to say yes.
I'll call him. John Okovich, the transportation reporter, the Pulitzer Prize-winning transportation reporter of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for joining me, man.
Good to see you.
When we come back, we'll be running O'Hare. Ha! You think you had delays before. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Radisson Blue Aqua Hotel here in Chicago, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Earlier in the show, we, of course, had to talk about all the great food in Chicago, and a little bit later we'll be talking to the chef here at the hotel as well about food, but Chicago is a whole lot more than just food, and people forget it's theater, a lot of it, 200 theaters in Chicago, as the deputy mayor told us. How about music? And joining me now, the owner of one of the oldest jazz clubs ever, goes back to 1907. It's called the Green Mill Jazz Club, and that's Dave Jamillo. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
I'm doing okay. So I know you don't go back to 1907, but the club does.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't go back that far, but I'm only the fifth owner since then, so it hasn't been a lot of turnover.
And you're local Chicago, aren't you?
Yeah, I grew up on the South Side.
Yeah, I know you did, because I want you to just say two words to me to make me feel at home here. Ready? Da Bears.
Yeah.
Da Bears. There you go. Okay, I feel better now.
Yeah.
So in the over 100 years that this club has been open, you know, give me an idea. Walk me through a little bit of the history of what's going on here musically in the Green Mill Jazz Club.
Well, it opened in 1907 as Pop Morris's Roadhouse, and it was kind of a stopover for people going to St. Boniface Cemetery behind the Green Mill. And then in 1910, the Shamalis brothers bought it, and they renamed it the Green Mill in 1910, and they started having live music, with dancing and outdoor gardens and a ballroom and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, jazz, I don't even know if jazz was jazz yet, but I mean, they were having live music, and then it just ended up becoming jazz, and that's the music they had.
And you're talking about guys like Al Jolson and Eddie Cantor and Sophie Tucker.
Right, exactly. They were playing there back in the teens and 20s, you know what I mean?
Sure, and speaking of the 20s, when the 20s were roaring, this place, let's call it what it was, ground zero for the mob.
Yeah, well, you know, people wanted to get liquor in, so what the Shamalis brothers did was give Machine Gun Jack McGurn a management contract to run the joint, him and Danny Cohen. And Machine Gun Jack McGurn, whose real name is Vicente Garibaldi, he's not pretty Irish, and he worked for Al Capone, and Al Capone used to hang out there because Joe E. Lewis was his favorite entertainer, and he was a singer at the time. And the story, the kind of wild story that happened at the Green Mill, Joey Lewis is making $650 a week, and he's offered $1,000 a week to go to the Rendezvous Club. He tells Machine Gun Jack McGurn, look, I'm going to quit and go to this other place. McGurn says, you can't quit. You have a lifetime contract. Well, you know, Joey Lewis is a tough guy. He quits anyway. He goes to work for a week at the other place, and Machine Gun Jack McGurn and his guys go to the Commonwealth Hotel where Joey Lewis lived, and they cut off part of his tongue, slash his vocal cords. They leave him there to die, and the guy don't die. And he comes back to work for the guys that tried to kill him in 1930 as a comedian because he couldn't sing anymore.
Is that an absolutely true story?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the movie The Joker's Wild was made about Joey Lewis's life. Frank Sinatra played his life, and Joey Lewis was still alive at the time. Joey Lewis told Frank Sinatra, you had more fun playing my life than I did.
And he got Sinatra to come to the club, didn't he?
I don't know. I heard that Sinatra was in there, but I don't know that for a fact.
Hey, bottom line is it certainly redefines the words lifetime contract now, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. No one ever quits now.
And nobody ever quits. Well, listen, if you're working for a guy named Machine Gun McGurn, something tells me you already know the kind of contract you got.
Yeah, you would think you would know a little bit better.
Now, when you bought the grain mill, and back in 1986, how did you go about restoring it to its original era?
Well, you know, it was all there. It just was falling apart. So something, you know, like you redo the bar, meaning you just sand it and restain it and things like that to make it all original looking. And then like some of the frames and stuff, I had an artist that actually redid the plaster of Paris on some of the frames that were falling apart, and then he would paint it to make it look like there's nicotine on it so it looked original. And so, you know, we just had to put some updates in there to be able to pass inspections, but other than that, nothing's changed, you know.
Amazing.
We have
nothing's
the same
changed.
Cash registers from the 30s.
And do they still work?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The two old ones are 34 and 36. We got a new one in the front. That's a 1940s model. That one never falls apart.
I love it. Well, you know what?
Still have dial telephones.
I love you. You still have the rotary phones?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why they?
And I know they still work.
Yeah.
I love it.
We have a jukebox with 45s in it.
I'm coming over there. But whatever you do, if I come over there, don't give me a lifetime contract, okay?
I'll be nice to you.
All right. Dave Jamila, the owner of an institution here in Chicago, the Green Mill Jazz Club, dating back to 1907. And if you're like me and you like rotary phones and old records on the jukebox and stories like that, go check them out. When we come back, we're switching back to food with the chef right here at the Aqua, Christian Fantoni. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide with our own lifetime contract right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel. Brand new hotel just opened up here in Chicago. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Talked earlier in the show about just the